Why? Morgaine whispered back, momentarily sharing the sense of fun in her voice. That is one thing about being a High Queen, madam. No one will dare to ask you why. Whatever you do, they will think it well done. Or if they do not, they will not dare to tell you so. Guinevere giggled a little. But you must call me by my name, Morgaine, not just madam. When you say madam, I look about for some stout old lady like Dame Flavilla, or King Pellinore's queen. At last the feast began. Morgaine had more appetite now than she had had at Arthur's crowning. She sat between Guinevere and Igraine, and ate with a good appetite. The abstemious ways of Avalon seemed far behind her. She even ate some meat, though she didn't like it. And since there was no water on the table, and beer, mostly for the servants, drank the wine she really disliked. It made her head swim a little, though it wasn't as fiery as the strong barley liquors common at the court of Orkney, which she hated and never touched. After a time, Kevin came forward to play, and the conversation died. Morgaine, who hadn't heard a fine harper since leaving Avalon, listened, letting the past slip away. Suddenly she longed for Vivian. Even when she raised her eyes and saw Lancelot, who, as Arthur's closest companion, sat nearer to him than any other, even Gawain his heir, and shared his dish, she thought of him only as the companion of those years at the lake. Vivian, not Igraine, is my real mother, and it was for her I cried out. She bent her head, blinking back tears she didn't know how to shed. The music died away, and she heard Kevin's rich voice. "We have another musician here," he said. "Will the Lady Morgaine sing for this company?" How, she wondered, did he know I was pining for the touch of my harp? "It will be a pleasure to play your harp, sir, but I haven't touched a fine one for many years. Only a makeshift at Lot's Court." Arthur said, and sounded ill-pleased, "What, my sister sing like a hired musician for all these people?" Kevin looked offended, as well he might, thought Morgaine. In a sudden rage she rose from her seat, saying, "What the master harper of Avalon condescends to do, I am honoured to do. In music the gods only are served." She took the harp from his hand, seating herself on a bench. It was larger than her own harp, and for a moment her hands fumbled on the strings. Then she found the set, and her hands moved more surely, playing a northern song she had heard at Lot's Court. She was suddenly grateful for the wine that had cleared her throat. She heard her own voice rich and sweet. It had come back as strong as ever, though she hadn't recognized it till this moment. Her voice was contralto, deep and strong, trained by the bards at Avalon, and she was proud again. "Guinevere may be beautiful, but I have the voice of a bard." And even Guinevere crowded close when she was done to say, "Your voice is very lovely, sister. Did you learn to sing so well in Avalon?"
"Why, yes, madam. Music is sacred. Did you not learn the harp in your nunnery?"
Guinevere shrank. "No, it is unseemly for a woman to raise her voice before the Lord." Morgaine chuckled. "You Christians are overfond of that word unseemly, especially when it relates to women," she said. "If music is evil, then it is evil for men as well. And if it is a good thing, should not women do all the good things they can do to make up for their supposed sin at the beginning of the world?"
"Still, I wouldn't have been allowed.
Once I was beaten for touching a harp," said Guinevere wistfully. "But you have cast a spell over us, and I cannot think but this magic is good."
Kevin said, "All the men and women of Avalon learn something of music, but few have such gifts as the Lady Morgaine. A fine voice is born, not trained, and if it is a gift of God, then it seems to me that it is arrogant to look down and think little of such a gift, be it given to man or woman. We cannot believe God has made a mistake in giving such a gift to a woman, since God makes no mistakes, so we must accept it wherever it is found. I cannot argue theology with a druid, said Hectorius, but if I had a daughter born with such a gift, I would hold it a temptation, that she would be tempted to step beyond the place appointed to a woman. We are not told that Mary, the mother of our Lord, sang or danced.
The Merlin said softly,
Though we are told that when the Holy Ghost descended upon her, she lifted up her voice and sang, My soul hath magnified the Lord.
But he said it in Greek. Only Hectorius and Lancelot and the bishop recognized the Greek words, although Morgaine too had heard them more than once. The bishop said firmly,
But she sang in the presence of God alone. Only Mary the Magdalene is said to have sung or danced before men, and only before our Redeemer saved her soul for God, for it was part of her wicked ways.
Igraine said with a flicker of mischief, King David was a singer, and played, we are told, upon the harp. Do you suppose he beat any of his wives or daughters for playing on the harp?
Morgaine flashed. If Mary of Magdala, I mind the story, played on the harp and danced, still she came to be saved, and we are nowhere told that Jesus told her to sit meekly and be silent. If she poured precious balm on the head of Jesus, and he wouldn't let his companions rebuke her, he may well have enjoyed her other gifts as well. The gods give of their best, not their worst, to men.
Patricius said stiffly,
If this is the form of religion which is known here in Britain, we are well in need of such councils as our church has called together.
He scowled, and Morgaine, already regretting her hasty words, lowered her head. It was hardly suitable to pick a quarrel between Avalon and the church at Arthur's wedding. But why didn't Arthur speak out? All at once, everyone began to talk all together, and Kevin, taking the harp again, began to play a lively air, under cover of which the servants went around with fresh delicacies, which nobody wanted by now. After a time, Kevin put by the harp, and Morgaine, as she would have done in Avalon, poured him wine, and knelt to offer it to him. He smiled, and took it, gesturing to her to rise and sit by him.
Lady Morgaine, my thanks.
It is my duty and my pleasure to serve such a bard, Master Harper. Are you recently come from Avalon? Is my kinswoman Vivian well?
Well, but much aged, he said quietly. And I think pining for you. You should return.
Morgaine felt again the surge of unforgotten despair. She looked away from him. I cannot. But give me news of my home.
If you wish more news of Avalon, you will have to go there. I haven't returned myself for a year, since I am required to give news of all the kingdom to the lady. Taliesin is too old now for a messenger of the gods.
Well, Morgaine said, you will have something to tell her of this marriage.
I will tell her that you are alive and well, said Kevin, since she has mourned you. She hasn't now the sight to see for herself. And I shall tell her of her younger son, who is Arthur's chiefest companion. Indeed, he said, his lips curving in a sarcastic smile. Watching him with Arthur, I think him like that youngest disciple who leaned at dinner upon the bosom of Christ.
Morgaine couldn't keep back a small chuckle. Yonder bishop would have you whipped for blasphemy, no doubt, if he heard you say so.
Well, there sits Arthur, like to Jesus with his apostles, defending Christianity to all the land,
Kevin said.
As for yonder bishop, he is an ignorant man.
What, because he has no ear for music? Morgaine hadn't realized how she had starved for the banter of casual equals like this. Morgause and the gossip of her ladies were so small, so bound by little things.
"I would say that any man without an ear for music is an ignorant ass indeed, since without it he doesn't speak but brays," Kevin retorted. "But it is more than that. Is this any time for a wedding?"
Morgaine had been so long away from Avalon that for a moment she didn't know what he meant, but he pointed to the sky.
"The moon is waning from the full. This augurs ill for a wedding, and the Lord Taliesin told them so."
"But the bishop would have it a little after the full, so that all these people would have light to travel to their homes. And because it is the feast of one of their saints, I know not which. The Merlin spoke to Arthur as well, to tell him this marriage would bring him no joy. I know not why. But there was no honourable way to stop it seemed. All had gone too far."
Morgaine knew instinctively what the old druid had meant. She too had seen the way in which Guinevere looked upon Lancelot. Was it a flash of the sight which had caused her to shrink from Guinevere that day upon Avalon? "She took Lancelot from me for ever on that day," Morgaine thought. Then, remembering that she had been under a vow to keep her maidenhood for the goddess, looked within, in dull astonishment. Would she have been forsworn for his sake? She lowered her head in shame, almost fearing for a moment that Kevin could read her thoughts. Vivian had said to her that a priestess must temper everything with her own judgment. It had been a right instinct, vows or no vows, which had led her to desire Lancelot. "I would have done better, even by Avalon, to take Lancelot then. Then would Arthur's queen have come to him with her heart untouched, for Lancelot would have formed that mystical bond with me, and the child I bore would have been born of the ancient royal line of Avalon." But they had had other plans for her, and in the wreck of that she had left Avalon for ever, born a child who had destroyed any hope that she could ever give the goddess a daughter to her shrine. After Gwydion, she could carry no other to life. If she had trusted her own instinct and judgment, Vivian would have been angry, but they would have found someone suitable for Arthur, somehow. "By doing right, I did wrong. By obeying Vivian's word, I helped with the wreck and disaster of this marriage. For wreck I now know it will be."
"Lady Morgaine," Kevin said gently, "you are troubled. Can I do anything to help you?"
Morgaine shook her head, biting back tears again. She wondered if he knew she had been given to Arthur in the king-making. She couldn't accept his pity.
"Nothing, Lord Druid.
Perhaps I share your fears for this marriage made in a waning moon. I'm concerned for my brother, no more. And I do pity the woman he has wedded." And as she spoke the words, she knew they were true. For all her fear of Guinevere, not unmixed with hatred, she knew that she did pity her. Marrying a man who didn't love her, loving a man she could not wed. "If I take Lancelot from Guinevere, then I do my brother a service, and his wife as well. For if I take him away, she will forget him." She had been trained to examine her own motives in Avalon, and now she cringed inwardly. She wasn't being honest with herself. If she took Lancelot from Guinevere, it wouldn't be for her brother's sake, nor for the sake of the kingdom, but purely and solely because she desired Lancelot herself. "Not for yourself. For the sake of another you could use your magic, but you must not deceive yourself." She knew love charms enough. It would be for Arthur's good. It would work to the advantage of the kingdom, she told herself repeatedly, if she took Lancelot from her brother's wife. But the unsparing conscience of a priestess kept saying, "This you may not. It is forbidden to use your magic to make the universe do your will." So, still, she would try, but she must do it unassisted, with no more than her own woman's wiles. She told herself fiercely that Lancelot had desired her once without the aid of magic. She could certainly make him desire her again. Guinevere was weary of the feasting. She had eaten more than she wanted, and although she had sipped only one glass of wine, she felt overly hot, and slid her veil back, fanning herself. Arthur had come to speak to many of his guests, moving slowly toward the table where she sat with the ladies, and finally reaching her. With him, Lancelot and Gawain. The women slid along the benches, making room, and Arthur sat beside her.
"It is the first moment I've really had to speak to you, my wife."
She held out her small hand to him. "I understand. This is more like a council than a wedding feast, my husband and my lord." He laughed somewhat ruefully.
"All events in my life now seem to become so. A king does nothing in private."
"Well," he amended, smiling, seeing the flush that spread over her face,
"almost nothing.
I think there will be a few exceptions, my wife.
The law requires that they must see us put to bed together, but what happens after that need concern no one but ourselves, I trust."
She lowered her eyes, knowing that he had seen her blush. Once again, with a flood of shame, she realized that she had forgotten him again, that she'd been watching Lancelot and thinking, with the drowsy sweetness of a dream, how very much she wished it had been to him she had been joined in marriage this day. What damnable fate had made her a high queen? His eyes fell on her with that hungry look, and she dared not look up at him. She saw him turn his eyes from her, even before the shadow fell over them, and the Lady Morgaine stood there. Arthur made room for her at his side.
"Come and sit with us, my sister. There's always room for you here," he said,
his voice so languorous that Guinevere wondered for a moment how much he had drunk.
"When the feast has worn away a little, see, we have prepared something more for entertainment, perhaps something more stirring than the bard's music, beautiful though it is." "I didn't know you were a singer, my sister. I knew you were an enchantress, but not that you were a musician as well. Have you enchanted us all?"
"I hope not," Morgaine said, laughing, "else I would never dare sing again. What is that old saga about the bard who sang the evil giants into a circle of ringstones? And there they stand, cold and stone, to this day." "That one I've never heard," said Guinevere, "though in my convent there was a tale that these were evil folk who mocked the Christ on his way to his cross, and a saint raised his hand and turned them into crows who fly over the world crying out wailing jests for ever. And another tale of a saint who transformed a circle of sorceresses at their evil rites into a circle of stones."
Lancelot said lazily,
"If I had leisure to study philosophy instead of being warrior or counsellor or horseman, I think I would try to find out who built the ringstones and why."
Morgaine laughed. "That is known in Avalon. Vivian could tell you if she would."
"But," said Lancelot, "what the priestesses and the druids say may be no more truth than your pious nuns' fables, Guinevere. Forgive me. I should say my lady and queen. Arthur, forgive me. I meant no disrespect to your lady. But I called her by her name when she was younger and not yet a queen."
But Morgaine knew that he was simply seeking an excuse to speak her name aloud. Arthur yawned.
"My dear friend, I don't mind if my lady does not. God forbid I should be the kind of husband who wishes to keep his wife locked away in a cage from all other human beings. A husband who cannot keep his wife's kind regards and faithfulness probably doesn't deserve them."
He leaned over and took Guinevere's hand in his own.
"I think this feasting long. Lancelot, how long before the riders are ready?"
"I think they will be ready soon,"
Lancelot said, deliberately looking away from Guinevere.
"Does my lord and king wish me to go and see?"
Morgaine thought, "He's torturing himself. He cannot bear to look on Guinevere with Arthur. He cannot bear to leave her alone with him." She said, deliberately making a joke of a truth, "I think, Lancelot, our bridal couple wishes to have a few moments to talk together alone. Why do we not leave them here and go down and see ourselves whether the riders are ready?"
Lancelot said, "My lord," and as Guinevere opened her mouth to protest, he said roughly, "Give me leave to go."
Arthur nodded permission, and Morgaine took his hand. He let her draw him along, but she saw him turn his head halfway as if he couldn't take his eyes from Guinevere. Her heart was wrung. At one and the same time, it seemed that she couldn't bear his pain, and that she would do anything to get him away so that she need not see him look at Guinevere. Behind her, she heard Arthur say, "Until yesterday evening, I had no idea that the fates, in sending me a bride, had sent me a beautiful one." And Guinevere answer,
"But it wasn't the fates, my lord. It was my father."
Before Morgaine could hear what Arthur answered, they were out of earshot.
"I remember," Morgaine said, "once, years ago at Avalon, you spoke of cavalry as the key to victory over the Saxons. That and a disciplined army, like to the Romans. I suppose that is what you plan for these horsemen."
"It's true I've been training them. I hadn't imagined that a woman would remember a point of military strategy, cousin."
Morgaine laughed.
"I live under fear of the Saxons, like every other woman in these islands.
I passed through a village once, where a band of them had passed over. And every woman, from little girls of 5 years old, to old grandmothers in their 90s with no teeth and no hair, had been raped. Whatever offers hope to rid us of them once and for all is meaningful to me. Perhaps more than to men and soldiers, who need to fear only death."
"I had not thought of that," Lancelot said soberly.
"Uther Pendragon's troops were not above scouring the countryside for willing women, nor are Arthur's. But in general, there is no rape." "And I'd forgotten, Morgaine, you were trained at Avalon, and you think often on things which mean little or nothing to other women."
He looked up and clasped her hand in his.
"I had forgotten the harps of Avalon. I thought I hated the place, that I never wished to go back. And yet, sometimes, some little thing will take me back there. The sound of a harp, sunlight on ringstones, the scent of apples, and the sound of bees in the sun. Fish splashing in the lake, and the cries of water birds at sunset."
"Do you remember," she asked softly, "the day we climbed the Tor?"
"I remember."
With sudden bitterness, he said,
"I would to God you hadn't been sworn to the goddess that day."
She said in a low voice, "I have wished it almost as long as I can remember." Her voice suddenly broke, and Lancelot looked with apprehension into her eyes.
"Morgaine,
Morgaine, kinswoman,
I've never seen you weep."
"Are you like so many men, afraid of a woman's tears?" He shook his head, and his arm went around her shoulders.
"No," he confessed in a low voice. "It makes them seem so much more real, so much more vulnerable. Women who never weep frighten me, because I know they are stronger than I, and I'm always a little afraid of what they will do. I was always afraid of Vivian."
She sensed that he had been about to say, "my mother," and had shrunk from the words. They were passing under the low lintel of the stables. The long line of horses, tied there, shadowed the day. There was a pleasant smell of hay and straw. Outside she saw men moving back and forth, erecting piles of hay, standing up mannequins of stuffed leather, and men were coming in and out, saddling their horses. Someone caught sight of Lancelot and shouted,
"Will the High King and their lordships be ready for us soon, sir? We don't want to bring the horses out and keep them standing to get restless."
"Soon," Lancelot called back. The soldier behind the horse resolved himself into Gawain.
"Ah, cousin," he said to Morgain. "Lance, don't bring her in here. It's no place for a lady. A few of these damned beasts are still unbroken. Are you still resolved to take out that white stallion?"
"I'm resolved to have him ready for Arthur to ride into battle next time, if I break my own neck for it."
"Don't jest about things like that," Gawain said.
"Who says I'm jesting? If Arthur can't ride him, I'll ride him myself in battle, and I'll show him this afternoon in honour of the Queen."
"Lancelot," Morgain said, "don't risk your neck for that. Guinevere doesn't know one horse from another. She'd be as impressed if you rode a hobby horse from one end of the yard to another as by the feats of the centaur himself." The look he gave her was, for a moment, almost contemptuous, but she could read it clearly. How could she understand his need to show himself undamaged by this day?
"Go and get saddled, Gawain, and give the word on the field. We'll be ready in half an hour," said Lancelot. "And ask Kai if he wants to start."
"Don't tell me Kai's going to ride with that crippled leg of his,"
demanded one of the men, who spoke in a strange accent. Gawain turned on the stranger and said fiercely,
"Would you grudge him that, the one military exercise where that leg makes no difference and he's not tied to the kitchens and the ladies' bowers?" "Nay, nay, I see what you mean," said the strange soldier,
and turned to saddling his own horse. Morgain touched Lancelot's hand. He looked down at her, the mischief back in his eyes. "Here," she thought, "arranging something, risking his neck, doing something for Arthur. He has forgotten about love. He is happy again. If he could only keep himself busy here, he wouldn't need to moon after Guinevere, or any other woman." She said, "Show me this dangerous horse you're going to ride." He led her down between the rows of tied steeds. She saw the pale silvery nose, the long mane like linen floss, a big horse, tall as Lancelot himself across the shoulders. The creature tossed his head, and the snort was like a dream of dragons breathing fire.
"Oh, you beauty," said Lancelot,
laying his hand alongside the horse's nose. He sidled and stepped away. He said to Morgain,
"This one I trained with my own hands to bit and stirrup. It was my wedding present to Arthur, who has no leisure to break a horse for his own use. I swore it would be ready on his wedding day, for him to ride, and gentle as a house pet."
"A thoughtful gift," said Morgain.
"No, the only thing I could give," Lancelot said. "I'm not rich. Anyway, he has no need of jewels or gold. He's showered with those things.
This was a gift only I could give him." "A gift of yourself," said Morgain, and thought, "How he loves Arthur. This is why he's so tormented. It is not that he desires Guinevere that tortures him. It is that he loves Arthur no less.
If he was simply a wencher like Gawain, I wouldn't even pity him. Guinevere is virtuous, and I could take pleasure in seeing her turn him away."
She said, "I would like to ride him."
"There's no horse I fear."
He laughed.
"Morgain, you fear nothing, do you?"
"Oh, no, my kinsman," she said, suddenly sober. "I fear many things."
"Well, I'm not as fearless even as you. I'm afraid of battle, and I fear the Saxons, and I fear I will be killed before I have tasted all there is to life," he said. "And so I never dare shrink from any challenge. And I fear lest both Avalon and the Christians are wrong, and there should be no gods, and no heaven, and no afterlife, so that when I die, I will perish forever. So I fear to die before I have savored my fill of life."
"It doesn't seem to me you've left much untasted," Morgaine said.
"Ah, but I have, Morgaine. There are so many things I long for, and whenever I pass one by, I regret it so bitterly, and wonder what weakness or folly prevents me from doing what I will," he said. And suddenly he turned in the horse lanes and put his arms hungrily round her, pulling her close. "Desperation," she thought bitterly. "It isn't me he wants. It is a moment of forgetfulness of Arthur and Guinevere in one another's arms this night." His hands moved with a detached, practiced deftness over her breasts. He pressed his lips to hers, and she could feel the whole hard length of his body pushing against her. She stood in his arms, motionless, feeling languor and a rising hunger that was like pain. She was hardly conscious of her small movements to fit her body against his. Her mouth opened under his lips. His hands were over her. But when he moved with her toward one of the piles of hay, she roused to a dim protest. "My dear, you are mad. There are 50 of Arthur's soldiers and riders swarming in this stable." "Do you mind?" he whispered. And she murmured, shaking with excitement, "No. No." She let him push her down. Through the back of her mind, in bitterness, was the thought, a princess, Duchess of Cornwall, a priestess of Avalon, tumbled in the stables like some dairymaid, without even the excuse of the Beltane fires. But she closed it away from her mind, and let his hands move on her as they would, unresisting. Better this than break Arthur's heart. She didn't know whether it was her own thought, or that of the man whose body was somehow all over hers, whose fierce, furious hands were bruising her. His kisses were almost savage, driving into her mouth in a rage. She felt him pull at her dress and move to loosen it for him. And then there were voices, clamouring, shouting, a noise like hammering, a frightened scream, and suddenly a dozen voices were all yelling, "Captain! Lord Lancelot! Where is he? Captain?" "Down here, I thought." One of the younger soldiers ran down between the horse lines. Swearing savagely under his breath, Lancelot thrust his body between Morgaine and the young soldier, while she buried her face in her veil and hunched herself, half naked already, into the straw so that she wouldn't be seen. "Damnation! Can't I be out of the way for a moment?" "Oh, sir, come quickly. One of the strange horses. There was a mare in season, and two of the stallions began fighting, and I think one of them's broken a leg. Hell and furies!" Lancelot was swiftly tucking garments into place, rising and towering over the lad who had interrupted them. "I'll come." The young man had caught sight of Morgaine. She hoped in a moment of horror that he hadn't recognized her. That would be a fine, juicy morsel of gossip for the court, indeed. "Not as bad as what they do not know, that I bore my brother's child." "Did I interrupt anything, sir?" the young man said, trying to peer around Lancelot, almost sniggering. Morgaine wondered, disconsolate. What will this do to his reputation? Or is it to a man's credit to be caught in the hay? Lancelot didn't even answer. He shoved the youngster along before him so that he almost fell. "Go and find Kai and the farrier. Get along with you." He came swiftly back, a whirlwind, kissed Morgaine, who had staggered somehow to her feet. gods, of all the damnable.
He pressed her hard against him with hungry fingers, kissed her so hard that she felt the brand of it was scalding red on her face.
Gods! Tonight, swear it. Swear!
She couldn't speak. She could only nod, dazed, numb, her whole body screaming for the interrupted fulfillment as she saw him rush away. A minute or two later, a young man came up to her deferentially and bowed, while soldiers began rushing back and forth. And somewhere there was the terrible, almost human scream of a dying animal.
Lady Morgaine?
I'm Griflet. The Lord Lancelot sent me to escort you to the pavilions. He told me he had brought you down here to see the horses training for my lord the king, but that you'd slipped and fallen in the hay, and that he was trying to see if you'd hurt yourself when they began shrieking for him, when this fight broke out with King Pellinore's horse. And he begs you to excuse him and return to the castle.
Well, she thought, at least it explained her kirtle crushed and stained with hay, and her hair and headcloth filled with hayseed.
She needn't go before Guinevere and her mother, looking like the woman in scriptures, the one taken in adultery. Young Griflet held out his arm, and she leaned on it heavily, saying, "I think my ankle is twisted," and limped all the way up to the castle. It would explain the hay, if she had had a hurt and fallen hard. One part of her was glad of Lancelot's quick thinking. The other, desolate, cried out for him to acknowledge and shelter her. Arthur had gone off with Kai to the stables, distressed at the accident to the horses. She let Guinevere fuss over her, and Igraine send for cold water and linen strips to bandage her ankle, and she accepted a place at Igraine's side in the shade, when horses and men rode out to display their exercises. Arthur made a little speech about the new legion of Carleon, which would revive the glories of the days of Rome and save the countryside. His foster-father, Ectorius, was beaming. Then a dozen riders rode out, displaying the new skills with which the horses could stop in mid-gallop, pull up, wheel, move together.
"After this," Arthur declared grandly, "no one will ever again say that horses are fit for nothing but to move wagons."
He smiled at Guinevere.
"How do you like my knights, my lady? I have called them after the old Roman equites, noblemen who could own and fit out their own horse."
"Kai rides as well as a centaur," Igraine said to Ectorius, and the old man smiled with pleasure. "Arthur, you never did a kinder thing than when you gave Kai one of the best of the horses."
"Kai is too good a soldier and too good a friend to wither in the house," said Arthur decisively.
Guinevere said, "Is he not your foster brother?"
"True. He was wounded in his first battle, and feared he would skulk at home with the women forever after that," said Arthur. "A frightful fate for a soldier. But on horseback, he fights as well as any."
"Look," exclaimed Igraine, "the legion has smashed down that whole series of targets. I have never seen such riding."
"I don't think anything could stand against that attack," said King Pellinore. "What a pity Uther Pendragon could not live to see this, my boy. Oh, excuse me, my lord and king."
Arthur said warmly,
"My father's friend may call me whatever he wishes, dear Pellinore. But the credit must go to my friend and captain, Lancelot."
Morgause's son, Gaheris, bobbed in a bow to Arthur.
"My lord, may I go down to the stables and see them unsaddled?"
He was a bright, merry-looking boy of 14 or so.
"You may," said Arthur. "When will he come to join Gawain and Agravain at our side, aunt?"
"This year, perhaps,
if his brothers can teach him soldierly arts and keep him close," Morgause said, then raised her voice.
"No, not you, Gareth,"
and made a snatch at the chubby 6-year-old.
Gaheris, bring him back here.
Arthur spread his hands with a laugh.
Don't worry about it. Boys run to stables like fleas to dogs. I've been told how I rode my father's stallion when I was scarce 6 years old.
I don't remember. It was only a little before I went to be fostered with Ectorius, he said. And Morgaine shivered suddenly, remembering a fair-haired child lying like death, and something like a shadow in a bowl of water. No, it was gone.
Does your ankle pain you much, sister?
Guinevere asked solicitously.
Here, lean against me.
Gawain will look after him, Arthur said offhandedly. I think he's the best man we have at training the young knights and riders.
Better than the Lord Lancelot? Asked Guinevere.
Morgaine thought, she only wants to speak his name. But it is me he wanted not long ago, and tonight it will be too late. Better that than break Arthur's heart. I will tell Guinevere if I must. Arthur said,
Lancelot? He's our best rider, though too much of a daredevil for my taste. The lads all adore him, of course. Look, there's your little Gareth aunt, tagging after him like a puppy. They'll do anything for a kind word from him. But he's not as good at teaching the boys their business as Gawain. He's too flamboyant, and he likes to show off. Gawain takes them slow and easy, and makes them learn the art step by step, and they never get hurt through carelessness. Gawain's my best arms master. Look, there's Lancelot on that horse he's training for me.
He burst into a laugh, and Igraine said,
That little devil!
For Gareth had swung like a monkey from the saddle leather, and Lancelot, laughing, scooped up the boy in front of him on his saddle, and broke into a fast gallop, racing directly up the hill toward the sheltered place where the royal party sat watching. They raced at breakneck speed straight toward them, so that even Arthur gasped, and Igraine stepped back, her face white. Lancelot pulled up the horse so that it reared into the air and wheeled it round.
"Your horse, Lord Arthur," he said with a flourish, holding the reins with one hand, "and your cousin.
Aunt Morgause, take this little scapegrace and tan his breeches for him," he added, letting Gareth slide down almost into Morgause's lap.
"He could have been killed under the stallion's feet like that."
Gareth heard not a word of Morgause's scolding, looking up at Lancelot, his blue eyes wide with adoration.
"When you get older," Arthur said, laughing, aiming a playful cuff at the child, "I will make you a knight, and you shall ride out to conquer giants and evil raiders and rescue fair ladies."
"Oh, no, my lord Arthur," said the child,
his eyes still fastened on the white horse which Lancelot was riding up and down.
"The Lord Lancelot shall make me a knight, and we will go on a quest together."
Ectorius chuckled and said,
"Young Achilles has found his Patroclus, so it would seem." "I am quite in the shade," Arthur said good-naturedly. "Even my new-made wife cannot take her eyes from Lancelot, and begs him to call her by her Christian name. And now little Gareth would rather be made knight by him. If Lance were not my closest friend, I should be mad with jealousy."
Pellinore was watching the rider cantering up and down. He said,
"That damnable dragon is still hiding in a lake on my lands and coming out to kill my tenants, or their cows. Perhaps if I had a horse like that, who would stand to fight? I think I'll train a battle horse and go after it again. Last time I barely got away with my life."
"A dragon, sir?" asked little Gareth. "Did it breathe fire?"
"No, lad. But it had an almighty stench, and a noise like 60 packs of hounds all baying together from his belly," said Pellinore.
And Ectorius said,
"Dragons do not breathe fire, my lad.
That comes from the old way of calling a shooting star a dragon, for they have a long tail of fire. There may have been dragons once who breathed fire, but not in the memory of any living man.
Morgaine wasn't listening,
though she wondered how much of Pellinore's tale was true and how much exaggerated to impress the child. Her eyes were on Lancelot, putting the horse through its paces. Arthur said to Guinevere,
"I could never train a horse like that. Lancelot is training it to battle for me.
Look, 2 months ago that one was wild as one of Pellinore's dragons, and now look at him."
"He seems still wild to me," said Guinevere. "But then, I'm afraid even of the gentlest horses."
"A horse to be ridden in battle mustn't be meek as a lady's palfrey," said Arthur. "He must have spirit. God in heaven," he cried out, rising up suddenly.
From somewhere there was a blur of white. A bird of some kind, a goose perhaps, had suddenly flapped upward right under the horse's hooves. Lancelot, riding at ease, his vigilance relaxed, started as the horse reared upright with a frantic whicker, fought for control, slid off almost under the hooves, half senseless, managed to roll away. Guinevere screamed. Morgause and the other ladies echoed the scream, while Morgaine, quite forgetting she was supposed to have an injured ankle, leapt up and ran toward Lancelot, dragging him out from under the horse's hooves. Arthur, too, dashed for the horse's bridle, grabbing it, wrestling the horse by main force away from where Lancelot sprawled unconscious. Morgaine knelt beside him, quickly feeling his temple, where a bruise already darkened and a trickle of blood mingled with the dust.
"Is he dead?" Guinevere cried. "Is he dead?"
"No,"
Morgaine said with asperity. "Bring some cold water, and there ought to be some of that bandage linen left. He's broken his wrist, I think. He broke his fall with it so as not to break his neck. And the clout on his head." She bent down, laying her ear against his chest, feeling the warm rise and fall of it. She took the basin of cold water Pellinore's daughter handed her, sponging his brow with a bit of linen.
"Someone catch that goose and wring its neck, and give the goose boy a good thrashing. The Lord Lancelot could have broken his head or damaged the High King's horse."
Gawain came and led the horse back to the stables. The near tragedy had dampened the festivities, and one by one the guests began to drift away to their own pavilions and quarters. Morgaine bound up Lancelot's head and his broken wrist, mercifully completing the work of splinting the wrist before he stirred and moaned and clutched at it in agony. Then, in conference with the housekeeper, sent Kai for some herbs which would make him sleep, and had him carried to bed. She stayed with him, though he didn't know her, only moaned and stared about with eyes that refused to stay in focus. Once he stared at her and muttered, "Mother," and her heart sank. After a while he fell into a heavy, restless sleep, and when he woke he knew her. "Morgaine, cousin, what happened?"
"You fell off a horse."
"Horse? What horse?" he asked, confused. And when she told him, he said positively,
"That's ridiculous. I don't fall off horses."
And dropped off to sleep again. Morgaine sat beside him, letting him clutch at her hand, and felt that her heart would break. The mark of his kisses was still on her mouth, on her aching breasts. Yet the moment had passed, and she knew it. Even if he should remember, he wouldn't want her. He had never wanted her, except to dull the agony of thinking of Guinevere and of his love for his king and cousin. It was growing dark. Far away in the castle, she heard sounds of music again. Kevin was harping. There was laughter, singing, festivity. Suddenly the door opened, and Arthur himself, carrying a torch in his hand, came in.
"Sister, how does Lancelot?"
"He'll live. His head's too hard to break," she said with a hard flippancy.
"We wanted you among the witnesses when the bride was put to bed, as you witnessed the marriage contract," said Arthur. "But I suppose he shouldn't be left alone, and I wouldn't want him left to a chamberlain, not even to Kai. He's fortunate he has you with him. You are his foster sister, are you not?"
"No,"
said Morgaine with unexpected anger. Arthur came to the bedside and picked up Lancelot's limp hand. The injured man moaned, stirred, and looked up, blinking.
"Arthur?" "I'm here, my friend," said Arthur. And Morgaine thought she had never heard a man's voice so tender. "Is your horse all right?" "The horse is fine. Damn the horse," Arthur said. "If you'd been killed, what good would a horse be to me?"
He was almost weeping.
"How did it happen?" "A damned goose flew up. The goose boy's in hiding. I think he knows he'll be beaten within an inch of his life." "Don't do that," Lancelot said. "He's only a poor, stupid creature without all his wits. He's not to blame that the geese are cleverer than he is, and one wandered loose. Promise me, Gwydion."
She was astonished that he used the old name. Arthur pressed his hand and bent down to kiss Lancelot on the cheek, carefully avoiding the bruised side.
"I promise, Galahad. Sleep now."
Lancelot gripped his hand hard.
"I came close to wrecking your wedding night, didn't I?"
he said, with something Morgaine recognized as her own hard irony.
"Believe you did. My bride has wept so hard over you. I wonder what she would do if I had broken my head," Arthur demanded, laughing.
Morgaine said fiercely, "Arthur, even if you are the king, he must be kept quiet."
"Right."
Arthur straightened.
"I will send the Merlin to look in at him tomorrow. He shouldn't be left alone tonight, though."
"I'll stay with him," she said angrily.
"Well, if you're sure."
"Go you back to Guinevere. Your bride is waiting for you."
Arthur sighed, subdued. After a moment, he said,
"I don't know what to say to her, or what to do."
"This is ridiculous. Does he expect me to instruct him, or to instruct his bride?" At the look in his eyes, she lowered her own. She said very gently, "Arthur, it is simple. Do as the goddess prompts you." He looked like a stricken child. At last, he said hoarsely, fighting the words,
She isn't the goddess. She's just a girl, and
she's frightened."
After a moment, he blurted out,
"Morgaine, don't you know that I still..."
She couldn't bear what he might be going to say.
"No,"
she said violently, holding up her hand, commanding silence.
"Arthur, remember one thing at least. To her you will always be the god. Come to her as the Horned One."
Arthur crossed himself and shivered. He whispered at last,
"God forgive me. This is the punishment."
And fell silent. They stood looking at each other, unable to speak. Finally he said,
"Morgaine, I have no right. Will you kiss me once?"
"My brother?"
She sighed, stood on tiptoe and kissed his forehead. Then she signed his head with the sign of the goddess.
"Bless you,"
she whispered.
"Arthur
Go to her. Go to your bride. I promise you. I promise in the name of the goddess. It will be well. I swear it to you.
He swallowed. She saw the muscles in his throat move. Then he broke away from her eyes and muttered, God bless you, sister. The door closed behind him. Morgaine dropped down on a chair and sat, unmoving, staring at Lancelot's sleep, tormented by pictures in her mind. Lancelot's face smiling at her in sunlight on the tor. Guinevere, water-draggled, her skirts soaked, clinging to Lancelot's hand. The horned god, his face smeared with deer's blood, drawing aside the curtain at the mouth of the cave. Lancelot's mouth frantic on her breasts. Had it been only a few hours ago? At least, she muttered aloud fiercely, he will not spend Arthur's bridal night dreaming of Guinevere. She laid herself down along the edge of the bed, pressing her body carefully against the hurt man's body. She lay there, silent, not even weeping, sunk in a despairing misery too deep for tears. But she didn't close her eyes that night, fighting the sight, fighting dreams, struggling for the silence and the numb absence of thought she had been taught in Avalon. And far away, in the furthest wing of the castle, Guinevere lay awake, looking in guilty tenderness at Arthur's hair shining in the moonlight, his chest that rose and fell with his quiet breathing. Tears trickled slowly down her cheeks. I want so much to love him, she thought. And then she prayed, O God, Holy Mary Virgin, help me to love him as I ought to do. He is my king and my lord, and he is so good. He deserves someone who will love him more than I can love. All around her, it seemed, the night breathed sadness and despair. But why? She wondered. Arthur is happy. He has nothing with which to reproach me. Whence comes this sorrow in the very air? Chapter 7. On a day in late summer, Queen Guinevere, with several of her ladies, sat in the hall at Caerleon. It was afternoon and very hot. Most of them were making a pretense of spinning, or of carding the last of that spring's wool for spinning. But the spindles moved sluggishly, and even the queen, who was the best needlewoman among them, had ceased to set stitches in the fine altar cloth she was making for the bishop. Morgaine laid aside the carded wool for spinning and sighed. At this season of the year, she was always homesick, longing for the mists that crept in from the sea over the cliffs at Tintagel. She hadn't seen them since she was a little child. Arthur and his men, with the Caerleon Legion, had ridden out to the southern coast to examine the new fort that the Saxons of the treaty troops had built there. This summer had brought no raid, and it might well be that the Saxons, except for those who had made treaty with Arthur and were living peacefully in the Kentish country, would give up Britain for lost. 2 years of Arthur's horse legion had reduced the Saxon fighting to a sporadic summer exercise. But Arthur had taken this season of quiet to fortify all the defences of the coasts. "I'm thirsty again," said Pellinore's daughter, Elaine. "May I go, my lady, and ask for some more pitchers of water to be sent?" "Call Kai. He will attend to it," Guinevere said. Morgaine thought, "She has grown a great deal. From a scared and timid child, she has become a queen."
"You should have married Kai when the king wished for it, Lady Morgaine," said Elaine, returning from her errand and sitting down on the bench beside Morgaine. "He is the only man under 60 in the castle, and his wife will never lie alone for half a year at a time."
"You're welcome to him if you want him," Morgaine said amiably.
"I still wonder that you did not," Guinevere said, as if it were an old grievance. It would have been so suitable.
Kai, the king's foster brother, and high in his favour. And you, Arthur's sister and Duchess of Cornwall, in your own right, now that the Lady Igraine...